There are commands in the Bible that we might just classify as great big commands. One of those is when Paul says, let us do good to everyone as we have opportunity. You ever thought about that command? God is saying, whoever it is you come across, you look for a way to do good for that person. So we're not only talking about family and co-workers and the lady at the Walmart checkout and the meter guy and everybody who comes by. We're talking about any and every association. Paul says if you can do well to that person, do good to that person, you do it. I'm intrigued by what he follows that with when he says, now look, I want you to do good to everybody, but for sure, make sure that you're doing good to those of the household of faith. Isn't it interesting that the apostle knows us quite well, doesn't he? He says, you may forget to do good to those who should be the closest to you, to those who share the common faith. But as he wrote to the Galatians, he says, I want to make a point to you that you make sure you're behaving properly, that you're doing good for your fellow Christian. And this evening, that's what I'd like for us to talk about, but we need to get a running start at it first. Because there are four passages in the New Testament that are very similar to what we find here in the book of Galatians that we've quoted. One of these is in Ephesians chapter 2, where the apostle says, so then you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God. And then our passage in Galatians 6, so then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. The apostle continues, and he writes to Timothy, he says, if I delay, you may know how one ought to behave in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, a pillar and a buttress of truth. And then the Apostle Peter adds one final passage we'll consider in this. He says, for it is time for judgment to begin at the household of God. And if it begins with us, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel of God? Now, we're going to kind of play a little bit of Sesame Street here. You ready? We're going to improvise a bit, though. It's not one of these things is not like the other. How about one of these things is not quite like the other? So if you look at these four passages, you're going to note a difference in one of them. And of course, that's Galatians chapter 6, verse 10, where we've got Paul discussing here the household of faith. So for the first part of our lesson this evening, let's take that one out for a minute and pay attention to what we're reading about the household of God. So what are we reading from these two apostles when they're talking about these things pertaining to being in God's house? Well, let's begin in Ephesians 2, where the apostle is going to tell us how we become members of this house. And so our passage under consideration, as we read earlier, tells us, look, you're not strangers anymore. You're not folks who are outside. You are now fellow saints and members of the household of God. So what exactly is the apostle telling us by this? Well, he's telling us, first of all, that God is the one who provides the way in. Let's look here. If you're in Ephesians chapter 2, we're going to back up a bit to verses 4 and 5. And he says, but God being rich in mercy, because of the great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. By grace, you have been saved. That is an amazing thought, isn't it? That when you and I consider where we were, that we were created for a noble purpose, but yet we had trespassed, we went off into sin, God says, I'm going to do everything I can possibly do to bring you back. And so the apostle says it's through His mercy and through His grace that this happens. Now, mercy and grace are two different ideas, but very related, aren't they? That here is this opportunity that is so totally undeserved, yet God gives it to us. And even though we deserve punishment instead, God says, I'm forgoing that to give you the opportunity to come in to my household. But now, we got to take Him up on it, right? The apostle continues on down in verses 8 and 9. And he says, for by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not your own doing, it's the gift of God, not as a result of works, so that no one may boast. Here we have our part in this, and that's faith. Have you ever noticed sometimes when we start talking about words like grace and mercy and faith, they're almost these kind of nebulous ideas out there that we can't quite put a grasp on? I would encourage you, if that's your feeling toward these words, to get a grasp on them. These are very concrete words. And when we talk about faith, it's the idea that we are taking God at the promise that He's made to us, and that we are accepting of that grace and mercy. Not only accepting, we are grabbing it with both hands because we understand what's been given to us. But it's our decision. The apostle says, God's made everything possible, but you're the one who's going to decide whether or not you're going to have that faith to come into the household. Now, the apostle here is going to begin a list in which he says, there are so many things that are available to you. We're not going to camp out on this, but we can't leave this chapter without seeing what he promises. You go down to verse 17. And he came and preached peace to you who were far off, and peace to those who were near. And we continue in verse 18. For through Him we have access in one Spirit to the Father. And we look at the first part of 19. So then you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are citizens, and we continue on, and saints and members of the household of God. And we continue in verse 22, and he says, in Him you also being built together into a dwelling place for God by the Spirit. And I want you to look at those promises. The apostle says, God has given you grace and mercy. And if you're willing to have the faith to accept that, you can have peace. You can have access to the Father. You can have citizenship in the kingdom. You can have membership in the household. In fact, you become a part of the household of God. What a rich, rich section where the apostle is saying, all this has been done for your salvation. But let's make this personal now. When you and I read this, what exactly does this mean for us? Well, first of all, it means that God is the one who is in charge of welcoming people into the household. We would think it awfully odd if a stranger showed up at our house one day and started inviting people in. And I can assure you, if that's strange for us, it's stranger for God. God is not giving anybody else that right. He says, I'm in charge of this. I'm the one who's inviting people in, and it's going to be people who accept my Son. Look at verse 17. And He came and preached peace to you who were far off, and peace to those who are near. We became Christians because of the preaching of Jesus Christ. Because of the peace that He offered through His message, through His death, through His resurrection, through His ascension to the right hand of God. So as we consider this, it means then that if I am ready to become a Christian, I'm going to make sure I understand what's in this book. I'm going to listen to the preaching of Jesus Christ, and I'm not going to accept anything else. And for those of us who are Christians, as we seek to invite others into this family on behalf of God with His invitation, we make sure that we're not changing that message. It's awfully easy to try to soften some things that God has said. In fact, we find that, I think we mentioned yesterday, in American culture, religious culture, how that the message has been softened to build up the numbers. God says, no, that's not it. Those who are coming into my household are coming by my way and by my standard. That's what it means for us. And that's not a bad thing. So it's God who welcomes us into this household. Now, let's look at our second verse, and that's the code of conduct that God expects. And so as Paul was writing to Timothy, you'll recall the passage we read earlier, he says, if I delay, you may know how you ought to behave in the household of God. In many minds, when you hear the term household of God, you think of a church building, right? I'm not sure, but what we reinforce that idea sometimes with our children when we sing this little song about tiptoe, tiptoe in God's house. Now, this is a church building, right? This is a structure. But the Apostle Paul says, I want to tell you what the household of God is. And he continues on, and he says, which is the church of the living God, a pillar and a buttress of the truth? God welcomes into His household any and everybody who's willing to accept His standard. But He says, when you come into my household, there are expectations of how you behave. And so as He talks to Timothy, He says, I want you to understand that, and I want you to preach this. So it's a reminder that you and I need to make sure we understand what household we're in and who we're confessing. Let's go over to 1 Timothy chapter 3 for just a minute. There is such a important, beautiful verse that follows the one that we're looking at. And so as we go to 1 Timothy 3, we go down to verse 16, and he talks about who we confess as members of this household. He says, great indeed, we confess, is the mystery of godliness. He was manifested in the flesh, vindicated by the Spirit, seen by angels, proclaimed among the nations, believed on in the world, taken up in glory. The apostle says that's who brought us into this household. And what he's going to continue now in the rest of the epistle is saying, and that's how you behave. How he behaved is how you behave. And so as we look at the instructions here, the apostle is saying, pay particular attention to the one you're confessing. That's the one who is the model for you. And so, we're not going to read this, but you take just a quick scan here. In chapter 4, he's going to talk about staying faithful to the faith. He's going to talk about being a servant of Jesus Christ. He's going to talk about behavior as a member of the church of God. All of these things are how one conducts oneself in God's household. Now once again, let's make it personal. What does this mean for me? If I am a Christian, if I have accepted God's grace and mercy, if in faith I have come to Him and I'm a part of this household now, what does that mean for me? It means that I am a very privileged person. Not because of anything of myself, but because God has looked upon me graciously. But it also means there are expectations. When we come up out of the waters of baptism, we're not finished. No, we've accepted the grace. You see, in those waters, that's where God says, okay, I'm going to see if you believe me or not. I'm going to see if you trust me, that it's here that your sins are going to be removed. And then when I'm raised up, I am now a member of that household, and God says, I want you to understand your behavior is to emulate what I want you to be like. There's an important point we need to make here that I am convinced that all of us need to hear more than probably we do. And that's when we talk about the rules of God. They are not random. Do you ever just get the impression that, at least in the minds of some, that God just kind of came up with all of these arbitrary rules just to see if we would behave? Just to put it out there and test us and try us. That's not it. There is no rule that God has given that is not for our betterment. And so when we think about those rules, what God is saying is when you conform, when you conduct yourself as a member of my household as I want you to, you're being remade into the image of Jesus Christ. For many folks, rules are not a very pleasant idea. And in a lot of discussions, we want to kind of back away from that, but let's don't. Let's look at the positive side of this. That when God says, this is what I want of you, what He's doing is making us fit for eternity. He's seeing that in the very long-term sense, when we reach that eternity with Him, all these things that we've gone through have made us ready for that. And so when we consider those things, we are indeed going to be holy as God Himself is holy. That's the message that He's giving us. And so I encourage all of us to redouble our efforts in this, to understand that every rule should bring us to appreciate the Father that much more, because every rule is showing us, this is how I want you to be so that you can be with me. That's what Paul is telling Timothy, and that's what he's telling us also. Well, let's look at the third passage. We've talked about coming into the household. We've talked about behaving in the household. And then Peter is going to tell us about remaining in the household of God. And our passage, once again, if you want to go ahead and be making your way over to 1 Peter chapter 4, we'll pay attention to a couple of things following this. But he says, for it is time for judgment to begin at the household of God. And if it begins with us, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel of God? I'm pretty sure Peter has Ezekiel playing on the radio as he's writing this. This sounds very similar to the warning that Ezekiel gave, that God is going to begin judgment there at the temple, that that's where it's going to start, that faithful, supposed faithful people had better prove themselves to be what God expects. And so whether one lived under the old covenant or whether one lives under the new, the standard is the same. And that's taking the head seriously. That when God says, these are my expectations for you, that is exactly what He means. And so what Peter is telling us then is that if we are going to stay as members of this household, then we better appreciate what the head tells us to do. Those are really important things. Not up to us, it's up to Him. And so that continued membership is going to be based on His judgment of us. Now I want you to notice, as we back up just a verse into verse 16, the apostle says this before our passage under consideration. He says, yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in that name. Why do I bring this passage up? Well, I think it's the lead-in. And what Peter is saying is, you need to understand that while there is great privilege and great blessing and great expectation in this household, it is absolutely going to turn some folks against you. There are going to be people who do not like you because you want to be like God. And he says you need to be prepared for that. And so God says, look, when I've given you this opportunity, I'm going to be as clear and upfront with you as I possibly can. You're going to have times when you will suffer because you are a part of my house. Very upfront about it. So why does he tell us that? He tells us that because of the expectations to stay firm in the face of difficulty. So let's make the point once again very personal. First of all, God is faithful to His faithful. For one who is following God, God is going to be faithful to you. I am not going to stand here this evening and tell you that's always easy to accept, because it's not. There are times when faithful people struggle with all kinds of things. And we think about it and we think that God, with just somewhat metaphorically speaking here, with a snap of His fingers could correct all this and fix it all. I'm telling you, it's a challenging idea. I know of currently three what I consider to be very young adults, all of whom have very small children, who are suffering with cancer. That's hard to accept, isn't it? That's hard to accept. And we go more to the line of Peter's ideas, and we're hearing more and more about Christians scattered throughout the world who are suffering persecution because of their faith. God says, I'm still faithful to you. It may not always be apparent, but I'm faithful to you to the very end and beyond. So I've got to accept that. And I've got to understand that when I come into the household of God, it is a fantastic, wonderful, precious gift. But it's not easy. There are going to be fiery trials. if we are active members of the household of God. There are going to be times people just don't like us because of the stands we take. We've got to be ready for that. And God says, if you are not prepared for that, it's quite likely you're going to lose your place in my family. And so what do we find? We find God welcomes, God has expectations, and God judges. But in the whole process, what He's doing is refining us for life with Him forever. Let's go to our passage now that we discussed right at the very beginning of the lesson. And that's where the Apostle Paul says, especially those of the household of faith. When we look at this passage in comparison with the three that we just examined, the previous passages focused on headship. God welcomes, God sets the rules, God judges. Here the apostle says, we do good to those of the household of faith. So what's the difference here? Well, in Galatians chapter 6, there is a focus on our relationship with each other. We are instructed that when we look at our fellow members of the household of God, that God says you are to treat each other in an extremely good manner. You are to do good for everyone who is sharing in this faith. So what does that mean? Well, I tell you what. Let's first of all start with what it doesn't mean. As a member of the household of faith, what is not my responsibility? Well, the first thing that is not my responsibility is that I do not set the conditions for how what comes into the household of God. That is not my job. I don't stand up and say, well, you've got to do A, B, and C if you're going to be a member of the household of God, because that's what I said. Not that at all. So then, that's not my responsibility. And so I better be careful with that. Sometimes we can allow, either intentionally, but I think much more unintentionally most of the time, to allow our prejudices to show. That there may be occasions where if we are not awfully careful, we are somewhat, perhaps subtly, perhaps without even realizing it, adding conditions to how one comes in to the household of God. How do we do that? Well, we mentioned yesterday, there in the household of God is no such thing as white pride, and black pride, and Latino pride, and Asian pride. We're all one, aren't we? Yet, what I have noticed is that most churches, everybody looks about like everybody else. Why is that? I think a lot of it is our comfort level. We are attracted to people who are like us. And so what we oftentimes find when we go into a church that's practicing primitive Christianity is pretty much people who are of the same color, and people who are pretty much of the same economic bracket, and people who are pretty much of the same interest. If I ever start making those things the standard, I put myself in the place of God. If I ever start thinking, well, these are the only people I really want to associate with, I'm in grave danger there. And again, I don't think there are many Christians who are intentionally going out and doing that yet. As we think about welcoming people into the household, sharing the message of God with them, let's make sure that we are very open with everyone with whom we come across. And if there's somebody who has an armful of tattoos, they are welcome in the household of God if they'll obey Him. And if there's someone who is just perhaps barely not living in the street, that person is welcome into the household of God. They may not look like me, they may not talk like me, they may not act like me in some ways, but yet if they are willing to accept God's grace and faith, they are as welcome as everybody else in this household. Let's make sure that we are not putting standards there that God has not put in. And let me also say this, that you and I are to teach only the plan of God's salvation. I think that's so important for us, that when we do seek to teach others, we give the whole plan. There is sometimes a great desire for us to head straight to baptism. But yet, what did the apostle do? He said, I need to tell you about grace, and I need to tell you about mercy, and I need to tell you about your faith, and I need to tell you how you can't earn your salvation. You see, it's kind of like when you pour the jigsaw puzzle out on the table. And there's lots of pieces. And as you start taking each of those pieces and putting them together, locking them together, a picture begins to emerge. And that's our picture of salvation. It's the peace of grace and of mercy and of faith and of calling on the name of the Lord and of baptism and of repentance. And you put all this together, and what you have then is the complete picture of God's salvation. That's what you and I are to teach and nothing else. Let's make sure that we're not setting undue conditions to become, at least what we're saying, members of this household. The other good thing is, it's not up to us to set the standards of behavior in the household. That's not our job. And so, we have to realize that every one of us has our personal likes, we have our own tastes, we have our own opinions. Those things are not behavior in the household of God. As long as we're not talking about moral things here, of course. Things that I like or don't like really make no difference when we take them out of that moral sphere. And so what we have to do is to make sure that we are very careful of not entering into that Pharisee mentality. The Pharisees are the guys we love to hate. You ever notice that? We talk about them, and rightly so, the Lord did. He called them stiff-necked and uncircumcised, and we know, but have you ever thought about who the Pharisees were? Do you think they just got up one day and said, you know what I think we'll do today? I think we'll just add a lot of traditions. I think we'll just add a whole bunch of things to what God said, of course. Every tradition they added, they thought, was doing something really, really good. And in their own personal lives, it might have. But the problem was they began to teach those things as law. So I can assure you, if we met Pharisees, they would seem pious and were pious. They would consider themselves to be strong people of faith. However, they had allowed their own ideas to either become on par or to replace the commands of God. How easy that is for us to do. And a church had better maintain a great deal of caution before it starts saying, well, our members are expected to, or our members are not expected to, and make sure that those are the rules of the household of God and not simply my own personal tastes. I've known of a couple of times, one church that did and one church that came almost too close to begin adding in rules of men on their membership. And in one of those churches, I had a word or two to say about that. Fortunately, the elders kind of thought better of what they were doing and didn't proceed with their plan. But that's a dangerous thing. To start saying to someone, you got to do it my way. Because suddenly then, I'm the one in charge. I'm the one responsible. No, that's not it. God has given us the rules for His household. And it's not up to me to change those to my own desires. And then, so fortunately, God has not said that it's our job to bring judgment on the family of God. Now, let me put a little bit of an asterisk by that. God has said on His behalf, there are times we carry this out. There are times in churches where you have an unruly member who must be disciplined. And so we think about Corinth. Can you imagine? I almost get the impression that this guy and his stepmother were coming into the assembly. And everybody was just kind of ignoring it, pretending that it really wasn't a thing. And Paul says, what's going on here? You need to take that guy and you need to deliver him to the devil so that he comes back to God. There are times that we need to do that. If there is someone who is a Christian yet behaving very much like the devil, you give him over to the devil for a season. But what that does not mean is that it's my personal disagreements and personality clashes that I'm using as judgment. If we could take every church problem for the past 2,000 years and divide them out, I wonder how many would be doctrinal and how many would be personality. I suspect that it would be greatly weighted toward the second. That there's differences of opinion, maybe not even a doctrinal thing, but a difference of opinion on how to carry something out. And before too long, you've got red faces and angry folks and people who are just upset and not speaking. I'm going to tell you, that's wrong. That's sin. But that happens. How much better it would be if we said, well, that's the way I would do it, but hey, you know, if we want to go this way and there's nothing doctrinally wrong with it, let's do it to keep the peace. In the long run, that's going to make a stronger church. And it may be that your idea was the best one. But what's happened? You've deferred. You said, I've got nothing that is so important to me that I would break fellowship within this family of God. I am so happy God sets the conditions to come into His house. And I am so happy that God makes the rules, looking at eternity, to make us into the kind of people He desires. And I am so happy God's the judge. Isn't it nice that when somebody says, do you think that person's going to hell? I have a young man who asks me that on a regular basis. And I say, you know exactly what I'm about to tell you. And he'll say, I know. It's God's business. Because that's what it is. You and I can warn. You and I can show. But you and I don't judge in that manner. God is the one who makes that decision. So then, what is my responsibility? As I do good to the household of faith, one of the things that I must make sure that I am doing is that I am helping my family to hang on. I think that is one of the most important things we can do for one another. Let me take you over to the book of Hebrews for just a minute, chapter 3. Interesting passage here that kind of ties in with our household idea. In chapter 3, verse 1 beginning, the writer says, therefore, holy brothers, you who share in a heavenly calling, consider Jesus, the apostle and the high priest of our confession, who was faithful to Him who appointed Him, just as Moses also was faithful in the household of God. For Jesus has been counted worthy of more glory than Moses, as much more glory as the builder of a house has more honor than the house itself. For every house is built by someone, but the builder of all things is God. Now Moses was faithful in all God's house as a servant to testify to the things that were to be spoken later, but Christ is faithful over God's house as a son. Now with all that is our lead-in, and we are His house, if indeed we hold fast our confidence and our boasting in our hope. Pay particular attention to that last line. If we hold fast. How many people can you think of right now who were once faithful Christians but no longer are? My guess is if you are a Christian of any years, there are several folks that have already slipped into your mind who you can think of. They were once faithful, but they didn't hang on. So what's my responsibility? Well, that's what the writer tells us here. Going on down to verse 13, he says, but exhort one another every day. That word exhort is so interesting. It's kind of like you're getting up alongside somebody. Now, the picture might be, you know, that here you've got some big project, you're pushing something or you're picking something up, and you're just arm to arm in this project. That's what God says for us. That's what we're to be as brethren in Christ. I can assure you that kind of relationship is not going to occur simply in this church building. This is the kind of relationship that says, I'm calling, texting, I'm visiting, I'm encouraging. A group that really takes this seriously is saying, I want to do everything within my power to make sure that you are going to reach that eternity with God as I want you to help me. I'm going to tell you what, that takes work. That takes time, it takes effort, it takes knowing each other, it takes confessing our sins, it takes praying for one another, it takes visiting with one another, enjoying one another in company. That's my responsibility in doing good to the household of faith. And let me add this. I need to work to keep peace. I tell you what, peace is something most appreciated after it's lost. When you are in a smooth running church, and then all of a sudden you hit a pothole, you understand my statement. That's all of our responsibility, to be people of peace. I am not getting political here, but I'm going to tell you, from my mundane observations, I am convinced this COVID epidemic has tested brotherly fellowship far more than anything within my life. Brethren fussing about to do it this way or don't do it this way or to mask or to not mask or inside or outside. And it's like, look, there are going to be tests that we have. And I may not agree. I may want to do it this way. I may think it's the best way to do it this way. But when I can defer to someone else, I'm doing what God desires. We live in such a divisive period of history. I guess all history is divided in some way, but in our country, the political divide, the social divide, you and I have got to be extremely careful. We are not allowing that to in any way endanger our precious fellowship within the household of God. Can I say something just plain out? If you are not a peaceful person, you need to be. I don't know any of you well. Well, I know a few of you well. You're peaceful folks. But I don't know the majority in this room well. If you have the tendency to want to fight, carry on, you need to change. If you're not a friendly person, you need to change. God tells us that what He has given to us is so precious, we must allow nothing to jeopardize it. And also, if that comes down to a matter of doctrine, we discuss it calmly. We don't have to have red faces and our veins and our necks don't have to pop out. We open our Bibles, we look, and we stay at it until we can come to a satisfactory biblical conclusion. Church that's committed to that as a church is going to have trouble. All churches do, but it's not going to be detrimental. Let's be a people of peace. And as I left you with the edification yesterday, I want to do the same thing tonight. I want you to seek out opportunities to do good. Within every church, there are people who need you. There are people who need encouragement. There are people who are down that you probably don't even know about. There is always somebody, usually several somebodies, who are in need of brethren doing good. And you'll be in that situation if you're not already. We do good to others and others do good to us. And that's how the household of God is to operate. I love old hymns. Those that were written in the 1800s are some of my absolute favorites. Such majestic lines. There's a stanza of an old hymn. It's kind of falling out of use in a lot of places, which is a shame. But you'll recall it. The hymn is called Rescue the Perishing. And I think it has one of the most beautiful lines that's ever been written. The hymnist wrote, down in the human heart, crushed by the tempter, feelings lie buried, that grace can restore. Touched by a loving heart, wakened by kindness, cords that were broken will vibrate once more. That's our something. You and I have got to be doing good for each other. Let's leave God's job to God, and let's take up the assignment that He's given to us and do it to the very best of our ability. Go ahead and get your songbook out. We'll sing this song here in just a minute. And as you're doing that, let me thank you for your excellent attention tonight. Everyone has listened so kindly, and I appreciate that. An invitation does not convert people. It simply encourages people who are on the verge of being converted. So tonight, that's what I want to do. If you know the grace of God and the mercy of God, if your faith is to the point where you believe that when you go down in those waters of baptism, your sins will be taken away, you're ready to become a Christian. And I hope you'll do that. And let me just say, if you're scared of all these eyes looking at you, we'll run everybody out of the building. You and Tony, or you and me, we can handle it. We'll take care of it. But don't delay. God has been so good. And His goodness has been extended to you, if you're not a Christian, by giving you one more opportunity. Maybe you're struggling. But one of the good things we do for one another is pray together. It doesn't have to be the confession of sin, though if you want to do that, that's good. And we can pray about it. But maybe it's a temptation, or maybe it's a weakness, or maybe it's a problem. And if you would like for us to join you in going to the throne room of God, we'll do that this evening. The Lord has been gracious to us, and His invitation is extended to you tonight. If you need to respond, won't you come as we stand and sing together?